yelled, running up to him. He stopped, giving her a wary look.
What do you want?
What do you mean, what do I want? She wanted to throw herself in his arms and have him tell her everything would be okay. She was upset and overwhelmed and filled with darkness. But there was a piece of vulnerability there that desperately needed him. I haven't been able to find you.
I've just been... His face darkened. I don't know. Thinking. Besides, from what I hear, you haven't been too bored.
No surprise, everyone knew about last night's fiasco. That kind of thing spread like wildfire thanks to the Academy's gossip mill. It was nothing, she said. The way he regarded her made her heart ache.
That's the thing, he said. Everything's nothing lately. All your partying, making out with other guys, lying.
I haven't been lying, she exclaimed. And when are you going to get over Aaron?
You aren't telling me the truth. It's the same thing.
It was an echo of Jill's sentiment. Lissa barely knew her and was really starting to hate her.
I just can't handle this. I can't be a part of you going back to your days of being a royal girl doing crazy stunts with your other royal friends.
Here's the thing. If Lissa had elaborated on her feelings more, on just how much her guilt and depression were eating her up and making her spin out of control, well, I think Christian would have been there for her in an instant. Despite his cynical exterior, he had a good heart, and Lissa owned most of it. Or used to. Now, all he could see was her being silly and shallow and returning to a lifestyle he despised.
I'm not, she exclaimed. I'm just... I don't know. It just feels good to sort of let loose.
I can't do it, he said. I can't be with you if that's your life now.
Her eyes went wide. Are you breaking up with me?
I don't know. Yeah, I guess.
Lissa was so consumed by the shock and horror of this that she didn't really see Christian the way I did. Didn't see the agony in his eyes. It destroyed him to have to do this. He was hurting too. And all he saw was the girl he loved changing and becoming someone he couldn't be with.
Things aren't the way they used to be.
You can't do that, she cried.
She didn't see his pain. She saw him as being cruel and unfair.
We need to talk about this. Figure it out.
The time for talking's past, he argued. You should have been ready to talk sooner. Not now. Not when things suddenly aren't going your way.
Lissa didn't know whether she wanted to scream or cry. She just knew she couldn't lose Christian. Not after losing me, too. If she lost both of us, there was nothing left for her in the world.
Please don't do this, she begged. I can change.
I'm sorry, he snapped. I just don't see any evidence of that.
He turned and abruptly walked away. To her, his departure was harsh and cold. But again, I'd seen the anguish in his eyes. I think he left because he knew if he stayed, he wasn't going to be able to go through with his decision. This decision that hurt, but that he felt was right. Lissa started to go after him. But a hand suddenly pulled her back. She turned and saw Avery and Adrian standing there. From the looks on their faces, they'd overheard everything.
Let him go, said Adrian gravely.
He'd been the one to grab her. He dropped his hand and laced his fingers through Avery's.
Going after him now is just going to make it worse. Give him his space.
He can't do this, said Lissa. He can't do this to me.
He's upset, said Avery, her concern mirroring Adrian's.
He isn't thinking straight. Wait for him to cool off, and he'll come around.
Lissa stared off after Christian's retreating figure, her heart breaking.
I don't know. I don't know if he will. Oh, God. I can't lose him.
My own heart broke. I wanted so badly to go to her, to comfort her and be there for her. She felt so alone, and I felt horrible for leaving her. Something had pushed her into this downward spiral, and I should have been there to help her out of it. That was what best friends did. I needed to be there. Lissa turned back and looked at Avery.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
Avery met her eyes, but when she did, the strangest thing happened. Avery wasn't looking at her. She was looking at me.
Oh, geez, not you again.
The voice rang in my head and snapped. I was out of Lissa.
There it was, the mental shove, the brush of my mind in waves of hot and cold. I stared around my room, shocked at how abrupt the transition had been. Yet I'd learned something. I knew then that Lissa hadn't been the one to shove me out before or now. Lissa had been too distracted and too distraught. The voice, that hadn't been hers either. And then I finally remembered where I'd felt that brushing touch in my head. Oksana. It was the same sensation I'd experienced when she had reached out to my mind, trying to get a feel for my moods and intentions, an action that both she and Mark admitted was invasive and wrong if you weren't bonded to someone. Carefully, I replayed what had just happened with Lissa. Once again, I saw those last few moments. Blue-gray eyes staring at me. Me, not Lissa. Lissa hadn't pushed me out of her head. Avery had. Chapter 24. Avery was a spirit user. Oh, shit. I sat back down on the bed, my mind reeling. I'd never seen it coming. Hell, no one had. Avery had made a good show of being an air user. Each Maroi had a very low level of control in each element. She'd just barely done enough with air to make it seem like that was her specialization. No one had questioned her further because, honestly, who would have ever expected another spirit user around? And since she was out of school, she had no reason to be tested anymore or forced to demonstrate her ability. No one was there to call her on it. The more I thought about it, the more the little signs were there. The charming personality, the way she could talk people into anything. How many of her interactions were spirit-controlled? And was it possible? Was it possible that Adrian's attraction had been compulsion on her part? I had no reason to feel happy about that, but, well, I did. More to the point, what did Avery want with Lissa? Avery compelling Adrian into liking her wasn't too out there. He was good-looking and came from an important family. He was the queen's great-nephew, and although family members of the current monarch could never inherit the throne immediately afterward, he'd have a good future, one that would always keep him in the highest circles of society. But Lissa? What was Avery's game there? What did she have to gain? Lissa's behavior all made sense now. The uncharacteristic partying, weird moods, jealousy, fights with Christian. Avery was pushing Lissa over the edge, causing her to make horrible choices. Avery was using some sort of compulsion to spin Lissa out of control, alienating her and putting her life in danger. Why? What did Avery want? It didn't matter. The why wasn't important. The how was. As in how I was going to get out of here and back to my best friend. I looked down at myself, at the delicate silk dress I wore. Suddenly, I hated it. It was a sign of how I'd been, weak and useless. I hastily took it off and ransacked my closet. They'd taken away my jeans and t-shirt, but I'd at least been allowed to keep my hoodie. I put on the green sweater dress, seeing as it was the sturdiest thing I had, feeling moderately more capable. I slipped the hoodie on over it. It hardly made me feel like a badass warrior, but I did feel more competent. Sufficiently dressed for action, I returned to the living room and started that pacing that tended to help me think better. Not that I had any reason to believe I was going to come up with new ideas. I'd been trying to for days and days with no luck. Nothing was going to change. Damn it! I yelled, feeling better with the outburst. Angry, I flounced into the desk chair, amazed that I hadn't simply thrown it against the wall in my frustration. The chair wobbled, ever so slightly. Frowning, I stood up and looked at it. Everything else in this place was state-of-the-art. Odd that I'd have a faulty chair. I knelt down and examined it more closely. There, on one of the legs, was a crack near where the leg joined with the seat. I stared. All of the furniture here was industrial strength, with no obvious joints. I should know, seeing how long I'd beat this chair against the wall when I first arrived. I hadn't even dented it. Where had this crack come from? Slamming it over and over had done nothing. But I hadn't been the only one to hit it. That very first day, I'd fought with Dimitri and come after him with the chair. He'd taken it from me and thrown it against the wall.
I'd never paid attention to it again, having given up on breaking it. When I'd later tried cracking the window, I'd used an end table because it was heavier. My strength hadn't been able to damage the chair, but his had. I picked up the chair and immediately slammed it into that diamond-hard window, half hoping I might kill two birds with one stone. Nope, both remained intact. So I did it again, and again. I lost track of how many times I slammed that chair into the glass. My hands hurt, and I knew, despite my recovery, I still wasn't at full strength. It was infuriating. Finally, on what felt like my gazillionth try, I looked at the chair and saw the crack had grown bigger. The progress renewed my will and strength. I hit and hit, ignoring the pain as the wood bit into my hands. At long last, I heard a crack, and the leg broke off. I picked it up and stared in amazement. The break hadn't been clean. It was splintered and sharp. Sharp enough to be a stake? I wasn't sure. But I knew for a fact that wood was hard, and if I used enough force, I might be able to hit a Strigoi's heart. It wouldn't kill one, but the blow would stun. I didn't know if it'd be enough to get me out of here, but it was all I had now. And it was a hell of a lot more than I'd had 1 hour ago. I sat back on the bed, recovering from my battle with the chair and tossing the makeshift stake back and forth. Okay, I had a weapon now. But what could I do with it? Dimitri's face flashed in my mind's eye. Damn it, there was no question about it. He was the obvious target, the one I'd have to deal with first. The door suddenly clicked open, and I looked up with alarm. Quickly, I shoved the chair into a dark corner as panic raced through me. No, no, I wasn't ready. I hadn't fully convinced myself to stake him. It was Ina. She carried a tray but didn't wear her usual subservient expression. The brief look she gave me was filled with hate. I didn't know what she had to be pissed off about. It wasn't like I caused her any damage. Yet. I strode over like I was going to examine the tray. Lifting the lid, I saw a ham sandwich and french fries. It looked good. I hadn't eaten in a while. But the adrenaline running through me had shoved any appetite I might have to the background. I glanced back up at her, smiling sweetly. She shot me daggers. Don't hesitate, Dimitri had always said. I didn't. I jumped at Ina, throwing her so hard against the floor that her head slammed back. She looked dazed, but quickly recovered and tried to fight back. I wasn't drugged up this time. Well, not much. And my years of training and natural strength finally showed themselves again. I pressed my body against her, keeping her firmly in place. Then, I produced the stake I'd had concealed and pressed those sharp points against her neck. It was like being back in the days of pinning Strigoi in alleys. She couldn't see that my weapon was a chair leg, but the sharp points got her attention as I dug them into her throat. The code, I said. What is the code? Her only response was a string of obscenities in Russian. Okay, not a surprise, considering she probably didn't understand me. I flipped through the meager Russian-English dictionary in my head. I'd been in the country long enough to pick up some vocabulary. Admittedly, it was equivalent to a 2-year-old's, but even they could communicate. Numbers, I said in Russian. Door. At least that's what I hoped I'd said. She said more impolite things to me, her expression defiant. It really was the Strigoi interrogation all over. My stake bit harder, drawing blood, and I forcibly restrained myself. I might question whether I had the strength to pierce a Strigoi heart with this, but severing a human's vein? Cake. She faltered a little, apparently realizing the same thing. Again, I attempted my broken Russian. Kill you. No Nathan. Never. What was the word? The church service came back to me, and I hoped I had it right. Never eternal life. It got her attention. Nathan and eternal life. The things most important to her. She bit her lip, still angry, but her tirade had stopped. Numbers! Door! I repeated. I pushed the stake in harder, and she cried out in pain. At last she spoke, rattling off a series of digits. Russian numbers were something I had memorized pretty solidly, at least. They were essential for addresses and phone numbers. She cited 7 numbers. Again!
I said. I made her say it 3 times and hoped I had it. But there was more. I was pretty sure the outer door had a different code.
Numbers. Door. 2.
I felt like a caveman. Ina stared, not quite getting it.
Door. 2.
Understanding glinted in her eyes, and she looked mad. I think she'd hoped I wouldn't realize the other door had its own code. More cutting with the stake made her scream 7 more numbers. Again, I made her repeat them, realizing I had no way to know if she was telling me the truth. At least until I tried the numbers. For that reason, I decided to keep her around. I felt guilty about what I did next, but these were desperate times. In guardian training, I'd been taught both to kill and to incapacitate. I did the latter this time, slamming her head back against the floor and rendering her unconscious. Her expression went slack, her eyelids drooping. Damn, I was reduced to hurting teenage humans. Standing up, I moved to the door and punched in the first set of numbers, hoping I had them right. To my complete and utter astonishment, I did. The electronic lock clicked, but before I could open the door, I just barely made out another click. Someone had unlocked the outer door. Shit, I muttered. I pulled away from the door immediately, picked up Ina's unconscious body, and hurried to the bathroom. I set her in the tub as gently as possible, and had just shut the bathroom door when I heard the main door open. I felt the telltale nausea that signaled a Strigoi was nearby. I knew one of the Strigoi could smell a human, and I hoped shutting her away would be enough to mute Ina's scent. I emerged from the hall and found Dimitri in the living room. I grinned at him and ran into his arms.
"You're back," I said happily.
He held me briefly and then stepped back.
"Yes."
He seemed slightly pleased at the greeting, but soon his face was all business.
"Have you made your decision?"
No hello. No how are you feeling? My heart sank. This wasn't Dimitri. I have more questions. I went over to the bed and lay down in a casual way, just like we always did. He followed a few moments later and sat on the edge, looking down at me.
How long will it take?
I asked.
When you awaken me.
Is it instantaneous? Once more, I launched into an interrogation session. Honestly, I was running out of questions, and at this point, I didn't really want to know the intricacies of becoming Strigoi. I was becoming more and more agitated with each passing moment. I had to act. I had to make use of my fleeting opportunity here. And yet, before I could act, I had to reassure myself that this really wasn't Dimitri. It was stupid. I should know by now. I could see the physical changes. I'd seen his coldness, the brutality. I'd seen him come fresh from a kill. This wasn't the man I'd loved. And yet, for that one fleeting moment earlier. With a sigh, Dimitri stretched out beside me.
"Rose," he interrupted, "if I didn't know better, I'd say you were stalling for time."
Yeah, even as a Strigoi, Dimitri knew how I thought and schemed. I realized if I was going to be convincing, I had to stop playing dumb and remember to be Rose Hathaway. I put on a look of outrage.
"Of course I am! This is a big deal! I came here to kill you, and now you're asking me to join you? You think this is easy for me to do?"
"Do you think it's been easy for me to wait this long? The only ones who get choices are Maroi, who willingly kill, like the Ozeras. No one else gets a choice. I didn't get a choice."
"And don't you regret that?"
"No, not now. Now that I'm who I was meant to be."
He frowned.
"The only thing hurt is my pride. That Nathan forced me, and that he acts as though I'm indebted to him. Which is why I'm being kind enough to give you the choice now. For the sake of your pride."
"Kind, huh?" I looked at him and felt my heart breaking all over again. It was like hearing the news of his death once more. I suddenly grew afraid I might cry. No. No tears. Dimitri always talked about prey and predators. I had to be the predator.
"You're sweating," he said suddenly. "Why?"
Damn. Of course I was sweating. I was contemplating staking the man I loved. Or thought I'd loved. And along with sweat, I was sure I was giving off pheromones of my agitation. Strigoi could smell all of those things, too.
"Because I'm scared," I whispered. I propped myself up and stroked the edge of his face, trying to memorize all of his features. The eyes, the hair, the shape of his cheekbones. In my imagination, I overlaid the things I remembered. Dark eyes, tanned skin, sweet smile. I think I'm ready, but it's, I don't know, it's such a big thing.
It'll be the best decision of your life, Rosa.
My breathing was growing rapid, and I prayed he'd think it was because of my fear of being turned. Tell me again, one more time. Why do you want to awaken me so badly? A slightly weary look crossed his face.
Because I want you. I've always wanted you.
And that's when I knew. I finally realized the problem. He'd given that same answer over and over, and each time, something about it had bothered me. I'd never been able to pinpoint it, though. Now I could. He wanted me. Wanted me in the way people wanted possessions or collectibles. The Dimitri I'd known, the one I'd fallen for and slept with. That Dimitri would have said he wanted us to be together because he loved me. There was no love here. I smiled at him. Leaning down, I kissed him gently. He probably thought I was doing it for the reasons I always did, out of attraction and desire. In truth, it was a goodbye kiss. His mouth answered mine, his lips warm and eager. I held out the kiss a little longer, both to fight back the tears leaking out of my eyes and to lull him into an unsuspecting state. My hand closed around the chair leg, which I'd hidden in my hoodie pocket. I would never forget Dimitri, not for the rest of my life. And this time, I wouldn't forget his lessons. With a speed he wasn't ready for, I struck out and plunged the stake through his chest. My strength was there, sliding the stake past the ribs and straight into his heart. And as I did it, it was like piercing my own heart at the same time.
Chapter 25. His eyes widened in shock, lips parting. Even though I knew this wasn't a silver stake, it might as well have been. To run it through his heart, I'd had to act as decisively as I would have if delivering a killing blow. I'd had to finally accept my Dimitri's death. This one was a Strigoi. There was no future with him. I would not join him. That still didn't make some part of me want to stop and lie down beside him, though, or at the very least see what happened next. After that initial surprise, his features and breathing had gone still, giving the illusion of death. That's all it was, however, an illusion. I'd seen it before. I probably had 5 minutes at most before he healed up and shook this off. I had no time to mourn for what was and what might have been. I had to act now. No hesitation. I ran my hands over him, searching his clothes for anything that might be of use. I found a set of keys and some cash. I pocketed the keys and started to leave the cash, but realized I might actually need it on the off chance I escaped this place. My own money had been taken when I arrived. I also swept up some of the jewelry on the table. Finding buyers for that kind of thing in big Russian cities wasn't too difficult. If I made it to said city. I stood up off the bed and gave Dimitri one last pained look. A few of the tears I'd hidden from him earlier now ran down my face. That was all I could allow myself. If I had a later, I'd mourn then. Before leaving, my gaze lingered on the stake. I wanted to take it with me. It was my only weapon. Pulling it out would mean he'd wake up in about a minute. I needed the extra time. With a sigh, I turned my back on him, hoping I'd find a weapon elsewhere. I sprinted over to the suite's door and punched in the code again. It unlocked, and I stepped into the corridor. Before going to the next door, I examined the one I'd just stepped through. To get into the suite, there was another keypad. Entry also required a code. Backing up a little, I struck and kicked the keypad as hard as I could. I did it twice more until the tiny red light on it went out. I didn't know if that would affect the lock on the inside of the suite, but in the movies,
damaging electronic locks always seem to work. Turning my attention to the next lock, I tried to remember the numbers Ina had told me. They weren't etched as strongly in my head as the first. I punched in 7 numbers. The little light stayed red.
Damn.
It was possible she lied about this set, but somehow I suspected my memory was the culprit here. I tried again, knowing the clock was ticking on how long I had until Dimitri came after me. The red light flashed again.
What were those numbers?
I tried to visualize them in my head and finally decided I wasn't entirely sure about the last two. I reversed their order the next time I put in the code. The light flashed green and the door unlocked. Of course, there was a security system of a different sort outside. A Strigoi. And not just any Strigoi. It was Marlin. The one I tortured in the alley. The one who hated me because I disgraced him in front of Galena. He was clearly on guard duty and looked as though he'd expected a boring night. Me coming out the door was a shock. That gave me, about a millisecond of surprise. My first thought was to just run at him with as much brute strength as I could. I knew he would do the same to me. In fact, that was exactly what he'd do. I stayed where I was, standing so that I could keep the door propped open. He came at me to stop my escape, and I stepped aside, pulling the door open wider. Now, I was neither skilled enough, nor was he inept enough to simply get lured in. He stopped in the doorway, trying to get hold of me. This gave me the difficult task of trying to both fend him off and drag him into the corridor behind the door. I stepped back into the doorway, hoping he'd follow. All the while, I had to keep the door open. It was all complicated, and I would have no time to punch in the code again. We fought in the confined space. The biggest thing I had going for me was that Marlin appeared to be a young Strigoi. Which made sense. Galena would want to keep around henchmen she could control. Of course, Strigoi's strength and speed compensated for a lack of experience. The fact that he had been a Moroi once also meant he probably had very little training. That also was a bonus for me. Dimitri was a badass Strigoi because he'd trained as a fighter before being turned. This guy had not. So, Marlin got a couple of punches in on me, one coming dangerously close to my eye. The other caught me in the stomach, knocking the air out of me for half a second. But most of the time, I was able to dodge him pretty well. This seemed to infuriate him. Getting beat up by a teenage girl didn't really score you cool points when you were a Strigoi. At one point, I even faked him out in one direction and came at him with a surprise kick. Easier to do than I'd expected in that damn dress that knocked him back a few steps. I just barely managed to keep my hand in the door when I did it, but that was all I needed. His stumble gave me a few seconds to slip out the door and into the main hall. Unfortunately, when I tried to close it, he was already trying to come through. With my hands, I tried to pull the door shut while kicking him back inside. We struggled this way for a while, and thanks to whatever luck I had left, I got the door closed enough so that only his arm was sticking through. Bracing myself, I pulled the door toward me in one huge, forceful movement. It slammed into Marlin's wrist. I half expected to see his hand detach and pop into the hall, but he jerked it back. Even Strigoi had certain instincts to avoid pain. Gasping, my physical strength still wasn't all it could be, I backed up. If he knew the code, this had been for nothing. A moment later, the door's handle shook, but didn't open. I heard a scream of rage, and then his fists beat on the door. Score one for me. No, score one for luck. If he'd known the code, I would have been... Thud! Marlin was still beating on the door, and I saw the tiniest dent appear on the metallic surface. Oh, crap, I said. I didn't stick around to see how many hits it'd take him to break it down. I also realized that even if I'd disabled the first lock, Dimitri would just be able to break that one down, too.
Dimitri.
No, I absolutely couldn't think of him now. As I ran down the hall, heading toward the stairs Dimitri and I traveled before, an unexpected memory suddenly popped into my head. When Dimitri had last threatened Nathan, he mentioned getting my stake out of a vault. What vault was that exactly? Was it here on the premises? If so, I certainly didn't have time to look. When weighing the option to search a 4-story house full of vampires or run off into the countryside before they found you, well, the choice was clear. and it was in the midst of that thought process that I ran into a human at the top of the stairs. He was older than Ina, and carrying a stack of linens that he dropped when we collided. With almost no pause, I grabbed hold of him and swung him against the wall. I had no weapon to threaten him with, and wondered how I'd assert my will now. Yet as soon as I had him pinned, he threw up his hands in a defensive gesture and began whimpering in Russian. There'd be no attacks on me here. Of course, now I had the problem of communicating what I needed. Marlon was still beating on the door, and Dmitri would be up in a couple of minutes. I glared at the human, hoping I looked terrifying. From his expression, I did. I attempted the caveman talk I had with Ina. Only this time, the message was a little harder.
Stick, I said in Russian.
I had no clue what the word for stake was. I pointed at the silver ring I wore and made a slashing motion.
Stick, where?
He glared at me in utter confusion and then asked in perfect English.
Why are you talking like that?
Oh, for God's sake, I exclaimed. Where is the vault?
Vault?
A place they keep weapons, he continued staring.
I'm looking for a silver stake.
Oh, he said.
That.
Uneasily, he cast his eyes in the direction of the pounding. I pushed him harder against the wall. My heart felt like it would burst out of my chest, but I tried to hide it. I wanted this guy to think I was invincible.
Ignore him. Take me to the vault, now.
With a frightened yelp, he nodded eagerly and beckoned me down the stairs. We descended to the second floor and made a sharp turn. The halls here were as twisty as the hedge maze Dmitri had shown me, all decorated in that gold and chandelier style, and I wondered if I'd even be able to get out of the house. Attempting this detour was a risk, but I wasn't sure if I could get outside without being followed. If I was, there'd be a confrontation. I'd need to defend myself. The human led me down another hall, and yet another. Finally, we reached a door that looked like any other. He stopped and peered at me expectantly.
Open it,
I said. He shook his head.
I don't have the key.
Well, I certainly don't.
Wait.
I reached into my pocket and pulled out the keys I'd lifted from Dmitri. There were 5 keys on the ring. I tried them one at a time, and on the third one, I got a hit. The door opened. Meanwhile, my guide was casting hasty glances behind him and looked ready to bolt.
Don't even think about it, I warned.
He blanched and stayed put. The room before us wasn't very big, and while its plush white carpet and silver-framed paintings made it look elegant, the room was, well, basically, it looked like a junkyard. Boxes and weird objects, a lot of personal items like watches and rings in particular, lay around in no order.
What is this?
Magic, he said, still obviously scared out of his mind.
Magic items kept here to fade or be destroyed.
Magic? Ah. These were items charmed by Maroi magic. Charms always had some kind of effect on Strigoi, usually unpleasant, with stakes being the worst, since they used all 4 physical elements. It made sense that Strigoi would want to isolate harmful objects and get rid of...
My stake!
I ran forward and picked it up, nearly dropping it because my hands were so sweaty. The stake was lying on top of a box, with a length of cloth and some weird stones. Studying it, I realized it wasn't actually my stake. Not that it made a difference for killing Strigoi. This stake was almost identical, save for a small geometric pattern running around its base. It was something guardians did from time to time if they felt particularly attached to their stake. Have a design or initials etched into it. Holding this stake, I felt a momentary pang of sadness. This had belonged to someone who'd wielded it proudly once, someone who was now most likely dead. God only knew how many other dozens of stakes were in here, seized from other unfortunate prisoners, but I had no time to search or mourn those who had died.
Okay, now I want you to take me to...
I hesitated. Even with the stake, it'd be a lot better for me if I didn't face any more Strigoi. I had to assume there'd still be a guard at the front door.
Some room on this floor with a window that actually opens, and is far from the stairs.
The guy thought for a moment, and then gave a quick nod.
This way.
I followed him through another maze of twisting corridors.
What's your name?
Oleg.
You know, I said, I'm getting out of here. If you want, I could take you with me. Having someone else, a human particularly, would definitely slow me down, yet my conscience wouldn't let me leave anyone behind in this place. He gave me an incredulous glance.
Why would I want to do that?
Sydney had definitely been right about humans making great sacrifices for immortality. Oleg and Ina were living proof. We rounded a corner and came face to face with an elaborate set of French doors. Through the etched glass, I could see book-lined shelves stretching all the way up the walls. A library, a huge one that extended on and on out of my sight. Better yet, I saw a large bay window opposite me, framed in heavy satin curtains the color of blood. Perfect, I said, pushing open the doors. That was when the nausea hit me. We weren't alone in the room. Galina sprang up from a chair near the fireplace on the far side of the room. A book dropped from her lap. I had no time to dwell on the oddity of a Strigoi having a fireside read, because she was coming right toward me. I almost might have thought Oleg had set me up, but he was cowering in a corner, his face mirroring the shock I felt. Despite the library's enormous size, she reached me in seconds. I dodged her initial attack, or tried to, at least. She was fast. Aside from Dimitri, the other Strigoi in this house were clearly the B-team, and I had forgotten just how badass a truly skilled Strigoi was. She caught me by my arm and swung me toward her, mouth open and fangs going straight for my neck. I had the stake in my hand and tried awkwardly to at least scratch her with it, but she was holding me too tightly. At last, I managed to duck a little and move my throat out of her range, but all this did was give her the opportunity to grab hold of my hair. She jerked me upright, and I screamed in pain. How she managed to hold onto my hair without ripping it right out was remarkable. Still gripping it, she shoved me into a wall. When I'd first fought with Dimitri upon my arrival, he'd been rough, but hadn't wanted to kill me. Galina did. She'd taken it on faith from Dimitri that I'd be an asset, but it was obvious now that I was a real pain in the ass. Her amnesty had ended, and she was intent on killing me. I at least had the comfort of knowing she probably wouldn't turn me into a Strigoi. I'd be lunch. A shout suddenly drew my attention to the door. Dimitri stood there, face blazing with anger. Whatever illusions I'd harbored about him being his former self disappeared. That fury radiated around him, his eyes narrowed and fangs showing. The pale skin and red eyes contrasted sharply against each other. He was like a demon sent straight from hell to destroy me. He strode toward us, and the immediate thought in my head was, well, at least this will end things that much faster. Except, it wasn't me he attacked. It was Galina. I'm not sure which of us was more surprised, but in that moment, I was totally forgotten. The Strigoi raced toward each other, and I froze, stunned at the terrible beauty of their fight. There was almost a gracefulness to the way they moved, the way they struck out and skillfully dodged each other. I stared a bit longer, and then mentally slapped myself into action. This was my chance to get out of here. I couldn't get distracted. I turned to the bay window, searching frantically for a means to open it. There was none. Son of a bitch! Maybe Oleg had set me up after all. Or maybe there was just some mechanism that wasn't apparent to me. Regardless, I felt pretty confident there was one way to get it open. I ran to the side of the room where Galina had sat and grabbed an ornate wooden chair. It was obvious this window wasn't made of the hardcore glass that had been in my room. This stuff was similar to the library's French doors, delicate and engraved with fanciful designs, even though darkly tinted. It couldn't require that much force to break. After all that fruitless beating in my room, I took a kind of smug satisfaction in slamming the chair into it with as much force as possible. The impact made a huge hole in one side of the window, glass spraying everywhere. A few shards hit my face, but it was nothing to concern me now. Behind me, the sounds of battle raged on. There were grunts and muffled cries as they fought, as well as the occasional sound of some piece of broken furniture. I yearned to turn around and see what was going on, but I couldn't. I took the chair and swung again, breaking the other half of the window. There was now a huge hole, perfect for me to get out of. Rose! Dimitri's voice triggered some instinctive response in me. I glanced back and saw him still grappling with Galina. They were both exhausted, but it was clear he was getting the worst of it. But in their fighting, he kept trying to restrain her in a way that exposed her chest to me. His eyes met mine. Back when he'd been a Dompierre, We'd rarely needed words to convey our thoughts. This was one of those times. I knew what he wanted me to do. He wanted me to stake her. I knew I shouldn't. I needed to hop out of that window right now. I needed to let them keep fighting, even though it seemed obvious Galena was about to win. And yet, despite my misgivings, some force drew me across the room, stake poised and ready. Maybe it was because I would never fully lose my pull to Dimitri, no matter what kind of monster he'd become. Maybe it was an unconscious sense of duty, since I knew he'd just saved my life. Or maybe it was because I knew one Strigoi was going to die tonight, and she was the more dangerous. But she wasn't easy to get a hold of. She was fast and strong, and he was having a hard time with her. She kept wriggling around, trying to renew her attack. All she'd need to do was incapacitate him as I had. Then it just required decapitation or burning to finish him off. I had no doubt she could arrange either. He managed to turn her slightly, giving me the best view of her chest I'd had. I moved forward, and then Dimitri slammed into me. I was addled for a moment, wondering why he'd attack me after saving me, until I realized he'd been pushed by Nathan. Nathan had just entered the library, along with Marlin. It distracted Dimitri, but not me. I still had the opening he'd given me on Galena, and I plunged my stake into her chest. It didn't go in as deeply as I would have liked, and she still managed to fight me, bucking hard. I grimaced and pushed forward, knowing the silver had to be affecting her. A moment later, I saw the pain twist her face. She faltered, and I pushed my advantage, shoving the stake in all the way. It took several seconds, but she eventually stopped moving, her body crumpling to the ground. If the other Strigoi noticed her death, they didn't pay attention. Nathan and Marlin were fixated on Dimitri. Another Strigoi, a female I didn't recognize, soon joined the face-off. I jerked my stake out of Galena and slowly began backing toward the window, hoping I wouldn't attract too much attention. My heart went out to Dimitri. He was outnumbered. I could possibly lend my strength and help him fight. Of course, my strength was fading. I was still suffering from days of vampire bites and blood loss. I'd fought two Strigoi tonight and killed a powerful one. That had been my good deed, removing her from the world. The next best thing I could do would be to leave and let these Strigoi finish off Dimitri. The surviving ones would be leaderless and less of a threat. Dimitri would be free of this evil state, his soul finally able to move on to better places. And I would live, hopefully, having helped the world by killing more Strigoi. I bumped against the windowsill and looked out. Nighttime. Not good. The sheer side of the manor was not ideal for climbing either. It could be done, but it would be time-consuming. I didn't have any more time. Directly below the window was a thickly leafed bush of some sort. I couldn't see it clearly, and only hoped it wasn't a rose bush or something equally sharp. A second-floor drop wouldn't kill me, though. Probably wouldn't even hurt. Much. I climbed over the ledge, briefly meeting Dimitri's gaze as the other Strigoi moved in on him. The words came to me again. Don't hesitate. Dimitri's important lesson. But it hadn't been his first one. His first had been about what to do if I was outnumbered and out of options. Run! Time for me to run. I leapt out the window. Chapter 26. I think the profanities that came out of my mouth when I hit the ground would have been understandable in any language. It hurt. The bush was not particularly sharp or pointy, but it wasn't soft by any stretch of the imagination. It broke my fall somewhat, though it didn't save my ankle from twisting underneath me. Shit, I said through gritted teeth, climbing to my feet. Russia sure was making me swear a lot. I tested the weight on my ankle and felt a twinge of pain, but nothing I couldn't stand on. A sprain, thank God. The ankle wasn't broken, and I'd had worse. Still, it was going to slow down my getaway. I limped away from the bush, trying to pick up the pace and ignore the pain. Stretching before me was that stupid hedge maze I thought was so cool the other night. The sky was cloudy, but I doubted moonlight would have made it easier to navigate. No way was I going to fight that leafy mess. I'd find where it ended and get out through there. Unfortunately, when I circled the house, I discovered an unhappy truth. The hedge was everywhere. It encircled the estate like some kind of medieval moat. The annoying part was, I doubted Galena had even had it installed for defense. She'd probably done it for the same reason she had crystal chandeliers and antique paintings in the hallways. It was cool. Well, there was nothing for it then. I picked an opening to the maze at random and started winding my way through. I had no idea where to go, no strategies for getting out. Shadows lurked everywhere, and I often didn't see dead ends coming until I was right on top of them. The bushes were tall enough that once I was only a little way into the maze, I completely lost sight of the top of the house. If I'd had it as a navigation point, I might have been able to just move in a straight, or nearly straight, line away. Instead, I wasn't entirely sure if I was going backward, or in circles, or what. At one point, I was pretty sure I'd passed the same jasmine trellis 3 times. I tried to think of stories I'd read about people navigating mazes. What did they use? Breadcrumbs? Thread? I didn't know, and as more time passed and my ankle grew sore, I began to get discouraged. I'd killed a Strigoi in my weakened state, but couldn't escape some bushes. Embarrassing, really.
Rosa!
The voice carried distantly on the wind, and I stiffened. No, it couldn't be. Dimitri, he'd survived.
Rosa, I know you're out there, he called. I can smell you.
I had a feeling he was bluffing. He wasn't close enough for me to feel sick, and with the cloying perfume of the flowers, I doubted he could scent me yet, even if I was sweating a lot. He was trying to bait me into giving up my location. With new resolve, I headed down to the next twist in the bushes, praying for the exit. Okay, God, I thought. Get me out of this, and I'll stop my half-assed church-going ways. You got me past a pack of Strigoi tonight. I mean, trapping that one between the doors really shouldn't have worked, so clearly you're on board. Let me get out of here, and donate Adrian's money to the poor, get baptized, join a convent. Well, no, not that last one. Dimitri continued his taunting.
I won't kill you, not if you give yourself up. I owe you. You took out Galena for me. And now I'm in charge. Replacing her happened a little ahead of schedule. But that's not the problem. Of course, there aren't many people to control now that Nathan and the others are dead. But that can be fixed.
Unbelievable. He truly had survived those odds. I'd said it before and meant it. Alive or undead, the love of my life was a badass. There was no way he could have defeated those three. And yet, well, I'd seen him take on crazy odds before. And clearly his being here was proof of his capabilities. The path ahead of me split, and I randomly chose the right-hand path. It spread off into the darkness, and I breathed a sigh of relief. Score. Despite his breezy commentary, I knew he was also moving through the maze, getting closer and closer. And unlike me, he knew the paths and how to get out of it.
I'm not upset about you attacking me either. I would have done it in your place. It's just one more reason why we should be together.
My next turn took me into a dead end filled with climbing moonflowers. I kept my swearing to myself and backtracked.
You're still dangerous, though. If I find you, I'm probably going to have to kill you. I don't want to, but I'm starting to think there's no way we can both live in this world. Come to me by choice, and I'll awaken you. We'll control Galena's empire together.
I almost laughed. I couldn't have found him if I wanted to in this mess. If I'd had that kind of ability, I'd... My stomach swirled a little. Oh no, he was getting closer. Did he know it yet? I didn't fully understand how the amount of nausea correlated to distance, but it didn't matter. He was too close. Period. How close did he need to be to truly smell me? To hear me walking on the grass? Each second brought him closer to success. Once he had my trail, I was screwed. My heart started racing even more, if that was even possible at this point, and the adrenaline pumping through me numbed my ankle, even though it still slowed me down. Another dead end spun me around, and I tried to calm myself, knowing panic would make me sloppy. All the while, that nausea grew in increments.
Even if you get out, where will you go?
He called.
We're in the middle of nowhere.
His words were poison, seeping into my skin. If I focused on them, my fear would win, and I'd give up. I'd curl into a ball and let him come for me, and I had no reason to believe he'd let me live. My life could be over in the next few minutes. A turn to my left led me to another wall of glossy green leaves. I sidestepped it quickly and headed in the opposite direction and saw fields. Long, vast stretches of grass spread out ahead of me, giving way to trees scattered off in the distance. Against all odds, I'd made it out. Unfortunately, the nausea was strong now. This close, he had to know where I was. I peered around, realizing the truth of his words. We really were in the middle of nowhere. Where could I go? I had no idea where we were. There, to my left, I saw the faint purple glow on the horizon that I'd noticed the other night. I hadn't realized what it was then, but now I knew. Those were city lights. Most likely Novosibirsk. If that was where Galina's gang did most of their deeds, even if it wasn't Novosibirsk, it was civilization. There would be people there. Safety. I could get help. I took off at as fast a run as I could manage, feet pounding hard against the ground. Even the adrenaline couldn't block that much impact out, and pain crackled up through my leg with each step. The ankle held, though. I didn't fall or go to a true limp. My breath was hard and ragged, the rest of my muscles still weak from all I'd been through. Even with a goal, I knew that the city was miles away. And all the while, the nausea grew and grew. Dimitri was close. He had to be out of the maze now, but I couldn't risk looking back. I just kept running toward that purple glow on the horizon, even though it meant I was about to enter a cluster of trees. Maybe it would provide cover. You're a fool, some part of me whispered. There's nowhere you can hide from him. I reached the thin line of trees and slowed just a little, gasping for breath and pressing myself up against a sturdy trunk. I finally dared to look behind me but saw nothing. The house glowed in the distance, surrounded by the darkness of the hedge maze. My sick stomach hadn't grown worse, so it was possible I might have a lead on him. The maze had several exits. He hadn't known where I'd come out. My moment of respite over, I kept moving, keeping the soft glow of the city lights in sight through the branches. It was only a matter of time before Dimitri found me. My ankle wasn't going to let me do much more of this. Outrunning him was slowly becoming a fantasy. Leaves left over from last fall crunched as I moved, but I couldn't afford to step around them. I doubted I had to worry any more about Dimitri sniffing me out. The noise would give me away.
Ross, I swear it's not too late.
Shoot. His voice was close. I looked around frantically. I couldn't see him, but if he was still calling for me, he likely couldn't see me yet either. The city haze was still my guiding star, but there were trees and darkness between me and it. Suddenly, an unexpected person came to mind. Tasha Ozera. She was Christian's aunt, a very formidable lady who was one of the forerunners of teaching Moroi to fight back against Strigoi.
We can retreat and retreat and let ourselves get backed into corners forever, she'd said once. Or we can go out and meet the enemy at the time and place we choose, not them.
Okay, Tasha, I thought. Let's see if your advice gets me killed. I looked around and located a tree with branches I could reach. Shoving my stake back into my pocket, I grabbed hold of the lowest branch and swung myself up. My ankle complained the whole way, but aside from that, there were enough branches for me to get good hand and footholds. I kept going until I found a thick, heavy limb that I thought would support my weight. I moved out onto it, staying near the trunk and carefully testing the limb's sturdiness. It held. I took the stake out of my pocket and waited. A minute or so later, I heard the faint stirring of leaves as Dimitri approached. He was much quieter than I had been. His tall, dark form came into view, a sinister shadow in the night. He moved very slowly, very carefully, eyes roving everywhere, and the rest of his senses no doubt working as well.
Rosa, he spoke softly. I know you're here. You have no chance of running. No chance of hiding.
His gaze was fixed low. He thought I was hiding behind a tree or crouched down. A few more steps, that was all I needed from him. Against the stake, my hand began to sweat, but I couldn't wipe it off. I was frozen, holding so still that I didn't even dare breathe.
Rosa.
The voice caressed my skin, cold and deadly.
Still scrutinizing his surroundings, Dimitri took one step forward, then another, and then another. I think it occurred to him to look up the instant I jumped. My body slammed into his, knocking him to the ground back first. He immediately tried to throw me off, just as I tried to drive the stake through his heart. Signs of fatigue and fighting were all over him. Defeating the other Strigoi had taken its toll, though I doubted I was in much better shape. We grappled, and once, I managed to rake the stake against his cheek. He snarled in pain, but kept his chest well protected. Over it, I could see where I'd ripped his shirt the first time I'd staked him. The wound had already healed.
"You are amazing," he said, his words full of both pride and battle fury.
I had no energy for a response. My only goal was his heart. I fought to stay on him, and at last, my stake pierced his chest, but he was too fast. He knocked my hand away before I could fully drive the stake through. In the process, he knocked me off of him. I flew several feet away, mercifully not hitting any trees. I scrambled to my feet, dazed, and saw him coming toward me. He was fast, but not as fast as he'd been in previous fights. We were going to kill ourselves in trying to kill each other. I'd lost my advantage now, so I ran off into the trees, knowing he'd be right behind me. I was certain he could outrun me, but if I could accrue just a tiny lead, then maybe I could secure another good attack place and try to... Ah! My scream rang into the night, jarring against the quiet darkness. My foot had gone out from under me, and I was sliding rapidly down a steep hillside, unable to stop myself. There were few trees, but the rocks and my ungainly position made the fall painful, particularly since I was wearing that sweater dress. How I managed to keep holding the stake was beyond me. I hit the bottom roughly, managed to briefly stand, and then promptly stumbled and fell into water. I stared around. On cue, the moon peeked out from the clouds, casting enough light to show me a huge expanse of black, fast-moving water in front of me. I gaped at it, utterly confused, and then I turned in the direction of the city. This was the Ob, the river that ran through Novosibirsk. The river headed right toward it. Glancing behind me, I saw Dimitri standing on top of the ridge. Unlike some of us, he'd apparently been watching where he was going. Either that, or my scream had tipped him off that something was amiss. It was going to take him less than a minute to come running down after me, though. I looked to either side of me, and then in front. Okay. Fast-moving water, possibly deep, very wide. It'd take the pressure off my ankle, but I wasn't thrilled about my chances of not drowning. In Legends, vampires couldn't cross running water. Man, I wished. That was pure myth. I did a double take to my left, and just barely saw a dark shape over the water. A bridge? It was the best shot I had. I hesitated before going toward it. I needed Dimitri to start coming down here. I was not going to run off and let him pace me up above on the ridge. I needed the time his hill descent would buy me. There. He took one step onto the slope, and I tore off down the shore, not looking back. The bridge grew closer and closer to me, and as it did, I realized just how high it was. I'd misjudged it from where I'd landed. The slopes around the bridge reached farther up the more I ran downriver. I was going to have a hell of a climb. No problem. I'd worry about that later. By which I meant in about 30 seconds, since that was probably how long it'd take Dimitri to catch up with me. As it was, I could hear his feet splashing through the shallow water on the bank, the sounds growing nearer and nearer. If I could just reach the bridge, if I could just get to high ground and to the other side. The nausea surged in me. A hand closed around the back of my jacket, jerking me backward. I fell against Dimitri and immediately began fighting him, trying to free myself. But God, I was so, so tired. Every piece of me hurt, and no matter how weary he was, I was worse.
"Stop it," he yelled, gripping my arms. "Don't you get it? You can't win."
"Then kill me." I wriggled, but his hold on my upper arms was too strong, and even holding the stake, I couldn't do anything with it.
"You said you would if I didn't surrender myself. Well, guess what? I didn't. I won't. So just get it over with."
That phantom moonlight lit up his face, eradicating the normal shadows and making his skin stark white against the night's backdrop.
It was like all the colors in the world had been blanked out. His eyes merely looked dark, but in my mind's eye, they glowed like fire. His expression was cold and calculating. Not my Dimitri.
It'd take a lot for me to kill you, Rose, he said. This isn't enough.
I wasn't convinced. Still holding on to me with that unbreakable grip, he leaned toward me. He was going to bite me. Those teeth would pierce my skin, and he'd turn me into a monster like him or drink until I was dead. Either way, I'd be too drugged and too stupid to know it. The person who was Rose Hathaway would leave this world without even realizing it. Pure panic shot through me, even as that part of me that was still in withdrawal cried out for more of those glorious endorphins. No. No. I couldn't allow that. Every nerve I had was set on fire, ramping up for defense, attack, anything. Anything to stop this. I would not be turned. I could not be turned. I wanted so badly to do something to save myself. My whole being was consumed with that urge. I could feel it ready to burst out. Ready to... My hands could touch each other, but not Dimitri. With a bit of maneuvering, I used the fingers of my left hand to pry off Oksana's ring. It slipped off and into the mud, just as Dimitri's fangs touched my skin. It was like a nuclear explosion going off. The ghosts and spirits I'd summoned on the road to Baia burst between us. They were all around, translucent and luminescent in shades of pale green, blue, yellow, and silver. I'd let loose all of my defenses, let myself succumb to my emotions in a way I hadn't been able to when Dimitri first caught me. The ring's healing power had barely kept me in check just now, but it was gone. I had no barriers on my power. Dimitri sprang back, wide-eyed, like the Strigoi on the road. He waved his hands around, swatting the spirits as one would mosquitoes. His hands passed right through them, ineffectual. Their attack was more or less ineffectual, too. They couldn't physically hurt him, but they could affect the mind, and they were damn distracting. What had Mark said? The dead hate the undead. And from the way these ghosts swarmed Dimitri, it was clear that they did. I stepped back, scanning the ground below me. There, the ring's silver gleamed up at me from a puddle. I reached down and grabbed it, then ran off and left Dimitri to his fate. He wasn't exactly screaming, but he was making some horrible noises. That tore at me, but I kept going, running toward the bridge. I reached it a minute or so later. It was as high as I'd feared, but it was sturdy and well-built, if narrow. It was the kind of country bridge that only one car at a time could cross. I've come this far, I muttered, staring up at the bank. It was not only higher than the one I'd fallen down, it was also steeper. I pocketed the ring and stake and then reached out, digging my hands into the ground. I was going to half-crawl, half-climb this one. My ankle got a slight reprieve. This was all upper body strength now. As I climbed, however, I began to notice something. Faint flashes in my periphery. An impression of faces and skulls. And a throbbing pain in the back of my head. Oh no. This had happened before too. In this panic state, I couldn't maintain the defenses I usually did to keep the dead away from myself. They were now approaching me, more curious than belligerent. But as their numbers grew, it all became as disorienting as what Dimitri was now experiencing. They couldn't hurt me, but they were freaking me out, and the telltale headache that came with them was starting to make me dizzy. Glancing back toward him, I saw something amazing. Dimitri was still coming. He really was a god. A god who brought death closer with each footstep. The ghosts still swarmed him like a cloud, yet he was managing progress, one agonizing step at a time. Turning back, I continued my climb, ignoring my own glowing companions as best I could. At long last, I reached the top of the bank and stumbled onto the bridge. I could barely stand. My muscles were so weak. I made it a few more steps and then collapsed to my hands and knees. More and more spirits were spinning around and my head was on the verge of exploding. Dimitri still made his slow progress, but was a ways from the bank yet. I tried to stand again, using the bridge's rails for support, and failed. The rough grating on the bridge scraped my bare legs. Damn! I knew what I had to do to save myself, though it could very well end up killing me too.
With trembling hands, I reached into my pocket and pulled out the ring. I shook so badly that I felt certain I'd drop it. Somehow, I held on and managed to slide it onto my finger. A small surge of warmth radiated from it into me, and I felt a tiny bit of control settle into my body. Unfortunately, the ghosts were still there. The traces of that fear of dying or turning Strigoi were still in me, but it had lessened now that I was out of immediate danger. Feeling less unstable, I sought for the barriers and control I usually kept up, desperate to slam them into place and drive my visitors away. "Go, go, go," I whispered, squeezing my eyes shut. The effort was like pushing on a mountain, an impossible obstacle.